So bacteria have been discovered and understood as pathogens, as essentially germs that drive human illnesses. And here we are, you know, learning about the microbiome being essential for human health. They are degrading and decomposing to make life, to nurture life, really. And without that, there wouldn't be any of it.
Du lytter til podkasten Våre steder, laget med Ragnhild Augustsen I samarbeid med Caroline Birkeligaus. Musikken laget av Petter Winter, og lyddesign utført av Tage Tollefsen. Denne episoden produsert for Norges landskapsarkitekter sitt forbund I forbindelse med deres fagdag I april, hvor temaet var uro. Naturen under press. Med økende tap av biologisk mangfold, ødeleggelse av økosystemet og tap av store naturområder. Det skaper uro. Det skaper uro både for mennesker, dyr og andre arter. På fagdagen så var det ett tema som vekt våres nysgjerrighet. For på scenen så sto det en tysk professor, og han forsøkte på det umulige. Å gjøre usynlige ting synlige. Han opptatt av at det ting I landskapet som påvirker oss, men som vi ikke kan se eller sanse. Og det som spennende at ny teknologi og mikroskoper har de siste årene revolusjonert hva vi I stand til å observere. Vi snakker om mikroorganismer. Mikroorganismer en del av vores verden og vores landskap. Begrepet mikroorganisme betyr alt I den levende verden som vi trenger mikroskop for å se. Og det vi etter hvert begynner å se, at den mikrobielle økologien I omgivelsene våre, den påvirker oss mer enn vi aner.
It's basically about the ecology of, so it's also central term is microbial ecology.
Mikrobiell økologi. Begrepet beskriver mikroorganismer I relasjon til miljøet de lever I. Stemmen du hører tilhører Jorg, som av så sjelden som en landskapsarkitekt, som mer opptatt av de her små, usynlige vesenene, enn det vi som mennesker kan se og sanse.
Hi, my name is Jorg Sieveke. I'm a landscape architect and urban designer, and associate professor here at NMBU. Life Science University, Norwegian University of Life Sciences.
Yeah, NMBU. Thank you so much for coming, Jörg. I'm really happy to have you here. I think we can all recognize that nature changes us. When moving through a forest or moving in landscape, at least I feel calm and can totally recognize how the nature changes me. And now it's been 2 weeks of drought. Now it's been raining for 2 days. And then this morning the rain stopped. Mm. And you can just hear how the nature is exploding, really exploding.
Mm-hmm. After weeks of drought, it's interesting in this regard too, because the tiny microbes that are in the air, you know, floating, are also seeding rain. Yeah, so they are, again, not visible, but all around us like clouds. And they do provide these kind of particles for condensation, which essentially allows rain to fall, yeah, to create and fall. So it's to some degree, it's a matter of sensibility if you recognize them or not. It's also a matter of knowledge. You know, that a rain that you witness may be induced or is most likely induced by airborne microbes.
Wow, and that's, I had no idea.
Yeah, and you know, it continues. It's like when you, maybe there's an interesting moment to address that it can be recognized because even the smell that you get after the rain is probably, I mean, I don't have any evidence of it, but I would be quite confident to make a claim that that smell is also driven by, you know, microbial life around us.
Jörg fortæller at regnet jeg opplevde her om dagen sannsynligvis ikke bare vann som faller ned fra himmelen, men dråper som formes I symbiose med mikroorganismer, som flyter rundt I lufta og som vi så vidt har lært oss å kjenne. Tenk på det, til selv regnet påvirket av mikroorganismer. Og dette var I hvert fall noe jeg ikke var klar over I det hele tatt, at regn ikke bare regn. Og jeg blir sittende igjen med en sånn følelse at herregud, det så mye vi ikke vet, og som vi trenger å bli bedre på å forstå om natur og omgivelsene rundt oss. Og så spør jeg da Jörg om hvorfor han mener at vi landskapsarkitekter bør være opptatt av den her forskningen.
It's really about health. I think health is a central term to, or some the most basic term to talk about the significance. I take great pride in landscape architects to be a generalist, yeah, and not specialist, which is always a very difficult position to prove what you actually stand for and what you can contribute, because you don't know anything in particular. You are a generalist, and now with concern of health from human health. There was this incredible recognition in human microbiome, which is also very recent science, recent findings, maybe 10 or 15 years old, understanding that the composition of microbial life in the digestive system of humans has a fundamental effect on brain activity. So there is a connection between the gut and the gut bacteria that is unique to each and every one of us, and how healthy your nervous system is, not only the nervous system, but also your immune system. So the in an interesting way, this sort of over-specialized sectors or silos in medicine have never comprehensively looked at these interactions, at these, you know, let's say, ecology of microbial life in the human body, how they interact. And this is an example of the benefit of a generalist perspective, because somebody stepped back and said, you know, there must be, or let's assume there is some interaction between the gut and the nervous system. And here we are, you know, learning about the microbiome being essential for human health. And so what I'm hoping to do, or what I'm interested to explore further, is then how can you as a generalist in the environment and environmental sciences connect the dots of this also highly specialist knowledge fields in people studying the role of of microbes, microbiology in wastewater treatment, or in soil science, for example. And again, I think as a landscape architect, there is certainly a lot of opportunity to make sense of these, again, specialist knowledge bases and see how they can actually contribute, let's say, to a more holistic idea of design, to also address and incorporate this layer of ecology.
Vi landskapsarkitekter bør være opptatt av helheten. Helheten I landskapet, det vårt fag. Og vi ganske vant til å snakke om jord, vann fra regn, klima, omgivelser, miljø og natur. Men vi ikke like vant til å snakke om mikroorganismer og den mikrobielle økologien. Og på samme måte som noen på et eller annet tidspunkt begynte å se på sammenhengen mellom tarmbakterier og nervesystemet vårt, så det spennende for oss landskapsarkitekter å forstå at kroppens mikroorganismer, de blir påvirket og kan ses I sammenheng med mikroorganismene I omgivelsene. Og de mikroorganismene I omgivelsene, det vårt business. For de finnes nettopp I jord og vann og regn og natur.
So, you know, the most basic plant, tree or grass, has three different microbiomes on its surface, in the tissue, and in the rhizosphere. Yeah? And they do interact. They are active agents of interacting with the soil and of plants among each other. And so they have what's called functional roles, which are absolutely essential for the health of also plants and the health of medium of soil. Another really significant and foundational role of microbial life is that they do decompose, right? They, if you think about earthworms or insects that are doing kind of the mechanical breakdown of any organic substance to on the way back to creating soil, then at some point, these microorganisms step up and do the finer work to actually make available nutrients and all these elements to recycle essentially substrate for all forms of life. So they are degrading and decomposing to make life, to nurture life, really. And without that, there wouldn't be any of it.
Mikroorganismer finner vi der det liv og på mange måter fundamentet for alt liv. Som den praktisk anlagte landskapsarkitekten så spør jeg da Jorg om hva mikroorganismene rundt oss trenger. Kan jeg bidra til at det skal bli sunnere miljø for mikroorganismer, for på denne måten å skape et sunnere miljø for meg og deg, og alle vi som tusler rundt på jorda I dag?
Yeah, it's interesting because if you talk in all seriousness to the specialists in microbiology, they would say everything is everywhere. Yeah, so it's not like you need to bring them or have them in a bag or seed them or whatever. This sort of idea of landscape architecture practice is, it's at best, I think it's a matter of. It's actually closer to nurturing, because they are present in the environment, and they have this incredible growth rates. But they are always present, and a lot of times they're just inactive and kind of sleeping. Yeah, so dormant is the term then, and they are activated. For example, there's this also fairly recent science that the root tip is sending out little messenger signals to the microbes in the soil, and as there is a communication and interaction between the very root tip and the microbes that are stimulated by it to then also help provide nutrients in the soil again. Something to appreciate and to make you understand why healthy soil matters and maybe start, to consider soil quality more and differently.
Mikroorganismene til stede til enhver tid. De overalt I alle ting. Men de kan også legge seg og sove. Og for å vekke dem så trengs det ulike ting. Man har for eksempel funnet ut at planter, de sender ut signaler fra røttene sine, og de her signalene, de aktiverer eller vekker mikroorganismer, som igjen bidrar til å skape næringsstoffer I jorda. Som landskapsarkitekt, sier Jørg, så handler det først og fremst å være klar over at de her mekanismene til stede, og begynne å sette pris på dem.
And in a way it's kind of simple because it seconds some of the goals of, for example, biodiversity. Yeah? That a richer palette of plants and structural diversity in higher organisms, let's say plants and animals, is promoting a greater diversity in the microbial life. And that is understood as beneficial and also healthy in the exchange of the human microbiome. There is one recent paper which is working with the term rewilding hypothesis, which again comes out of microbiology work, but is very close to what we are pushing for in landscape architecture, to essentially bring back, richer ecosystems, more diverse, more diversity into the urban realm. And for the same reasons, the microbial ecologists argue that it does provide a richer and more diverse system in this invisible sphere as well. Yeah. So it's in a way in line with a lot of goals that we have in the visible world. They don't contradict each other.
Jörg forteller at vi har jo noen ambisiøse klimamål som også snakker om å ta vare på natur og styrke eksisterende økosystemer som vi kan sanse og se. Og dette er veldig tråd med det å forsøke å styrke det mikrobielle økosystemet.
Okay, so another obstacle or another tradition that prevents landscape architecture from appreciating microbial life is its own tradition and, in a way, birth of the discipline. I know this in Germany for certain, but I think it applies to other countries too, that landscape architecture is actually also originated from an idea of urban hygiene. Yeah. And this goes back to 19th century science and discovery of people like Robert Koch, and is known as the germ theory, that germs would cause illnesses. So bacteria have been discovered and understood as pathogens, as essentially germs that drive human illnesses. And in order to prevent these illnesses and improve human health, there was a big push for urban hygiene. And landscape architecture then stepped up as a discipline to provide sanitation and a cleaner and healthier environment, which was the belief then. What's really interesting now, 100 or 150 years later, is that with essentially throwing out the baby with the bath with this over-sanitation, eradicating also, decimating a lot of bacteria in the environment, is now having unintended side effects on human health again, where many of these societal diseases like asthma or allergies can actually be pinned down to the absence of microbes or certain bacteria. So it's an overshoot of the immune system that is responding to the lack of exposure to microbes or bacteria. And so that's another tradition where our discipline, landscape architecture, is very much, again, trained in this modernist way to provide urban hygiene. And we slowly understand that it's been overdone, and that an exposure to a more diverse set of bacteria is actually positive or contributing to immune regulation. This is the again more recent science and knowledge in the field of microbiology.
Historisk sett så har vi landskapsarkitekter og for så vidt og arkitekter og byplanleggere vært opptatt av sammenhengen mellom omgivelsene våre og mennesker sin helse. Og helt siden vi oppdaget mark, har vi vært opptatt av at hygiene er viktig for helse. Og vi har forsøkt å ta kontroll over mikroorganismene. Og som Jørg sier, vi har kastet ut babyen med badevannet. Vi har oversterilisert omgivelsene våre. Og jeg spør Jørg om hvordan urban hygiene ser ut.
Yeah, well, one of the most apparent and striking examples is to bury entire water systems, rivers, and you know, to our recent work to unearth or daylight streams, urban streams, is to essentially undo projects that have been driven by this idea of urban hygiene, where water was, you know, at the time dirty and was not valued and was essentially canalized or put it underground in a pipe, as with all the good intentions, you know, this was the belief and the paradigm 100 years ago. In a more abstract sense, it's this this tradition of nurseries, right? That you would, in a kind of rigorous and standardized way, school trees in a very much with this idea of control and repetition and abstraction, which is from a different, you know, from this more, again, maybe holo beyond perspective or more ecological sense. The more you look at it, the more alienating it is, really, to produce plants these ways. There's this other dimension, which I think is another sort of modernist tradition, that we are trained to look at single entities, you know, first, the self-perceptions of humans as a singular person, yeah? But then also to address a plant as something singular, a tree as something singular. And so to look at the world, this training of looking at the world as a bunch of objects, singular objects, and now, again, only with the ecological framework, really breaking this up and understanding more the connections between things than the sort of standalone entities. In a bolder statement, it's probably fair, also backed up by specialist science today, it's probably fair to claim to go out and do a hike in the forest is not only feeling healthy, but it is healthy. It's evidently in this exchange of you know, the microbiome of the forest and the trees with your own, this sort of fluid exchange is per se healthy, beneficial for human health, and is helping your immune system. And it will also most likely prevent children from getting asthma or allergies, if they are exposed enough and early enough. I think that's fair to say, backed up with scientific evidence.
Vår modernistiske estetikk har en overdreven tro på single objekter og monokultur. Klippte hekker, klippte plener, og det vi nå begynner å forstå er at denne typen håndtering av omgivelsene våre er rett og slett for enkel. Det er egentlig ganske banebrytende og en erkjennelse å ta inn over seg i faget at det er ugresset som oppstår av seg selv i byen, er noe vi må lære oss å ikke bare akseptere, men verdsette som et viktig utgangspunkt for helse i byen. Selv om Jørg synes det er vanskelig å si noe helt bestemt eller garantert i forhold til at hvis du gjør sånn, så blir det sånn, så tillater han seg å si at det etter hvert er noen sammenhenger som begynner å bli ganske tydelig bevist gjennom forskning. Men så er det her da, at alle bakterier, de er ikke gode bakterier. Vi har akkurat opplevd en pandemi, og plutselig så ble arkitekturens svar på bekämpelse av sykdom aktuell igen, sant? Lys, luft, sterile overflata. Vi har spritet det som sprites kan, og i hvert fall jeg kjenner ganske mange som er redde for mugg i omgivelsene sine. Så jeg lurer jo på om det ikke også er med god grunn at vi er redde for de her bakteriene og mikroorganismene.
Well, I mean, I would say first it's again a matter of education and maybe to some degree. I mean, obviously there is also mold and there are bacteria and there are fungi which are pathogenic. I mean, which do cause human illnesses still. It's not like they don't exist anymore. So, and there's this training to be aware of them, kind of a societal training, the way that we've been raised, and maybe our parents' generation have been raised even more, to be aware of it and to stay away from it, and for good reasons. And I'm not here to draw the line between, you know, I can't tell you where the line is between a pathogen and, you know, a beneficial microorganism, but what again the state of the science tells us is that it's I think less than a percent. It's way less than a percent. It's more of a thousandth or even more part which are pathogens. The way larger number is beneficial.
Mindre enn 1% av alle mikroorganismer er skadelige for oss. Kanskje er det på tide at vi blir litt mer opptatt av de 99% som ikke er skadelige for oss, og som derimot egentlig er ganske viktige for oss. Vi trenger å utfordre vår egen oppfatning av hva som er skadelig og hva som gjør godt. Og vi trenger å være nysgjerrig på alle de oppdagelsene ny teknologi gjør for oss. Og ikke minst utfordrer oss selv på hva de her oppdagelsene skal få lov å bety for omgivelsene vi omgir oss med.
Yeah, I mean, if you know, if we have, I mean, as an educator or as a professor in the field, I think for landscape architecture, it is really important to understand that we rely on this, on the science, typically life science around us, yeah? And that this science and this body of knowledge is not static, it's evolving. And I mentioned this in a number of instances here. It's really exciting to follow the science and the recent development of science, to then think about how would it change our practice and how does it change the way that we educate, you know, next generation of landscape architects and what to even address and what to study. I have one thesis student that will present this week on paper chromatography, which is a very visual and very beautiful analytic method to portray soil quality on these filter papers. And they create these artifacts that look a bit like an iris. And they allow both, you know, an assessment of the soil quality, but they also this visual vehicle to make people understand and appreciate soil quality to begin with.
And so you are making what is invisible visible, yeah, for everybody.
Right. And yeah, so I'm advocating in at least in, you know, in academia to know your science and also make an effort to get an update on the science, and then also look beyond the field and embrace you know, artistic methods and ways, like you said, you know, that help make invisible things visible again. Yeah.
Great. I think that's
good finish.
Takk til Jorg for hans innstendige arbeid både i forskning og undervisning med studenter, for å bidra til å gjøre alle de her usynlige tingene synlige for meg og deg og alle sammen igjen.